gauge the children awards gently in order to understand why children avoid school and have called for regular training of teachers to help students feel comfortable at school. This was stated by Ibinabo Dixon, an educationist on women radio program Panorama. Dixon speaks further.
Parents should always try to gently understand why a child is picking against going to school on a particular day. Just understand it. Don't begin to say, oh, you are lazy, oh, you want to play, oh, you this and that. Get to the bottom of it. Why is my child not wanting to go to school? And also, there is need for training and retraining of our teachers to school. And lastly again, there is need for oversight function. Because if you don't do this, and do it, you know, randomly.
The Lagos State Government, through its Ministry of Women Affairs and Poverty Alleviation, WAPA, has lifted about 500 indigent women with 20,000 naira cash grant to supplement their small-scale businesses. The head of Department Women and Youth, Nigerian Labour Congress, NLC, Rita Goyet, has stated that it is important for the Senior Staff Association of Nigerian Universities to keep increasing the tempo of women visibility in the labour movement as a practical strategy for gender mainstreaming. As the violence against women and femicide continues to be a deeply rooted and prevalent issue in Turkey, human rights defenders and activists are debating if the hotlines and emergency numbers will help prevent the violence. In sports, Super Falcons remains a strong force in African football despite losing to Ghana 1-0 in Sunday's African Women's Cup of Nations qualifier, says coach Samson Unuano. Today marks 7 years and 194 days since our Chibok girls have been captured, and 3 years and 248 days since the abduction of Leah Sharibu, the Dapchi girl. Women Radio WFM 91.7 calls for the safe release of all our girls still in captivity. Women Radio WFM 91.7 demands justice from the government for victims and survivors of sexual abuse and rape. If you have been sexually abused, please contact the Sexual Assault Referral Center near you. Women Radio urges you to observe all precautionary measures against COVID-19 and stay safe. The News of 3 is edited by Taiwo Adeleye. My name is Sumto Titilayo Ajamma. Up next is Women Voices for Peace. Good afternoon.
WFM 91.7
for women.
Terrorism, wars, killings, and various vices.
Its effects are mostly felt by women and girls.
Peace and security is a collective responsibility as it concerns women, girls, men, and boys. Join WANEP
on Women's Voices for Peace every Tuesday at 3 p.m.
on Women Radio WFM 91.7 as we engage on issues of women, peace, and security.
On Women's Voices for Peace
on Women Radio WFM.
Like the moon and the sun, she is worth more than gold. Like the stars in the sky, she is worth more than diamond. She is worth more than silver. Oh, go need the man. Now
7 minutes past 3 on Your Women Radio WFM 91.7, Nigeria's only radio station for women and their families. You're welcome to Women Voices for Peace on Your Women Radio WFM 91.7. Women Voices for Peace, today we're discussing women disarmament and security in Nigeria. Women disarmament and security in Nigeria. Before proceeding into the program proper, my name is Sumto Titilayo Ajamma, and I'm working with you. I'm talking to you about women disarmament and security in Nigeria. According to a report from SBM Intelligence, the number of small arms in circulation in Nigeria in the hands of civilian non-state is estimated at 6,145,000, while the armed forces and law enforcement collectively account for 586,600 firearms. The proliferation of arms is not peculiar to Nigeria alone. According to Africa Faith and Justice Network, the persistence and the complication of wars in Africa are partially due to small arms proliferation. However, women are major victims of this, which is why today we're discussing women disarmament and security in Nigeria. My guest for today is Brenda Anugwam, lawyer and expert in gender matters. Brenda, good afternoon.
Hi, Sister. Good afternoon. Thank you for having me.
You're very welcome. Thank you very much for joining me on Women Voices for Peace today. All right, before we go into conversation, Brenda, the phone lines are open, 07000-917-917 or 0902-562-5455. Again, 07000-917-917 or 0902-562-5455. You can also reach me via text and WhatsApp messaging on 0703-175-6537. Again, 0703-175-6537. We're also social on at WFM917 on Instagram and Facebook. Again, at WFM917 on Instagram and Facebook. So the phone lines are open. You can contribute as we discuss. Now, Brenda, can you walk us through what disarmament is and why it's important? What is disarmament is it important?
Thank you so much. This is a very important topic, especially right now in Nigeria, given what is going on. And so disarmament simply means to reduce, to limit, or to destroy weapons of combat. That is simply what it means. But it will involve a lot more total elimination of weapons of combat or a specific type of weaponry. For instance, it could be a nuclear weapon, it could be a chemical weapon. Depending on the type of disarmament, it just simply means destruction, elimination, or completely reducing a certain type of armory or the entirety of weapons.
Hmm.
Now, it actually reduces or controls and destroys weapons of all or any specific type. Now, giving an opportunity for non-combative interaction to ensue, which eventually will lead to peace, which is, of course, the overall goal of everybody, the UN, Nigeria, every country in this world, I'm sure everyone wants peace. Mm. So in places like Nigeria where you're having conflict, disarmament is really very much in need. And a typical example of it is a historical treaty of 1919, the Treaty of Versailles, which led to the disarmament of Germany and its allies after World War One. And of course, disarmament can come in two different ways. Number one, physical disarmament.
Okay.
Which is where weapons, ammunition, guns, bombs are all collected and totally destroyed. this is just mere physical, but then it needs to be followed by education, awareness creation, capacity building of the people who have been bearing these arms. Because when you bear these arms and you live in the forest for a very long time, it is so difficult to let go of it. Even when you physically let go of it, psychologically, you will still be wanting. So you definitely would need education to follow in order for them to develop a better understanding of disarmament issues and their cross-cutting importance. That is why every October 24th, which of course marks the founding of the United Nations, there is a one-week-long observance of global disarmament. You know, talking about it, making our countries understand the game, which of course will be a safer and more secure country, and of course which will heighten the protection of citizens from harm. And then it also goes to educate countries and political figures that heightened tensions and dangers are better resolved through serious political dialogue and negotiation, and not by acquiring arms. And I do remember one thing the UN Secretary General, Antonio Guterres, said. He said, disarmament must be brought back to the center of our common efforts for peace and security. Thank you.
Disarmament must be brought back. Now, I like that particular statement because it emphasizes what this entire conversation is about. So in layman's terms now, would it be right to say the less firearms are out there and accessible for people, the higher the chances for peace? Are you there?
Yes, I am. Sorry, could you repeat your question?
Of course. I said in layman's terms, in simple terms for the common man to understand, will it be accurate to say the less firearms are out there and accessible for civilians, the higher chances we have for peace in a society?
Absolutely. Okay. Absolutely. Less firearms, less weapons, more of negotiation, more of dialogue in order to solve conflicts or disagreement. Absolutely. Less firearms, less weapons.
Of course.
Thank you.
You're very welcome. So talk to me about why women should be interested, women specifically. Why should this be of interest to us in the sense that women are not particularly the ones who carry firearms? That's what a school of thought will tell you. I mean, it is opined that women are the peacemakers, they're the peacekeepers, they're the mediators, the negotiators. They're usually not the ones who perpetrate use of firearms. So why should women be interested in disarmament and security in Nigeria particularly?
Every woman in Nigeria, all over the world, should be interested in disarmament and security. You see, a woman is a natural bastion of peace. In any situation of conflict, of rising tensions, it's usually the woman who comes the villain. And let's take it back to the household. Whenever there is a fight or grievance or a conflict between two families within the same family, or two brothers, it's the woman who brings peace. Mm. It's the woman who brings reason to the table. This is a natural gift that women have. So it's important for women to use this gift of nature to ensure that situations are calm and that these adrenaline-filled male leaders actually adopt more of a negotiation, more of dialogue, in order for us to have less tension, less conflict. You see, in a conflict situation, women and children suffer more. So women definitely should be interested in disarmament and stability and security in Nigeria. Women leadership is key. That is exactly why we are all canvassing for more women to be around the table, for more women to be in the political space. Let me give you an example. Just recently, a Nigerian woman, Chimamanda Ngozi Adichie, was discussing with the outgoing German Chancellor, Angela Merkel. And then she mentioned a picture of G7 leaders, you know, a group of world leaders who gather together. All of them happen to be men, except one person, Angela Merkel. And when Hillary Clinton saw that picture, she made a comment. She said, "This is the one woman who is holding all these men together." So in that picture represents a lot. In a situation where you have the global seven, the big seven, it is a woman who is holding them together. That is exactly why women leadership is key. In order for what all that we're going through in this country to calm, for nerves to calm, for us to experience peace, we need more women at the table. Because if we don't have more women at the table, we might continue in the situation that we are in right now. So yes, every woman should be interested. The consequences of conflict and all that is heavily borne by women and children. So every woman in Nigeria should be interested. Thank you.
I very much appreciate the fact that you mentioned the consequences of the use of firearms, particularly by civilians. And this is important because if women do not recognize how imperative it is to take this matter seriously, we might not necessarily see why this conversation is being had in the first place, let alone understand the import of why this conversation needs to be had and why actions need to be taken in regards to disarmament. So thank you very much for putting it in simple terms for anyone to understand. Now, talking about women participation in resolving conflict, because I like your mention of Angela Merkel in the whole in the G7 dynamic. It's very significant to this particular question I'm asking now, because we know, let me put this in a way that it's not necessarily a question. Angela Merkel being the glue, quote unquote now, not quote unquote, air quotes, yes, in air quotes, being the glue that holds that G7 team together, you would know that within that capacity, within that level of power that she holds, there would definitely come some challenges within that scope of responsibility. Bringing it down to Nigeria, can you identify some major challenges to women participation when it comes to resolving conflict?
Absolutely. There are challenges. And it's actually some of these challenges that are hindering women from, you know, sitting at the table to discuss disarmament, to talk about peace processes and all. In Nigeria today, the first challenge a woman has is insecurities. Women are usually the target. In most cases, women and children, especially girls, are usually the target of these miscreants terrorizing citizens. So the fear of harm being brought to the woman can dissuade her from, you know, taking the steps that men will take in order to find a lasting solution to peace. And let me give you an example. Sometime recently, we have a couple of people who have said that they have gone into the forest to go and look for the so-called bandits that have been terrorizing people. And they shared pictures and videos. It was all on TV, all over the media. If you look at those pictures and videos, you will not find one woman. So what is the guarantee that if you get into the bush with those men, you will come out unharmed like those men? So those are some of the things. The fear of what will happen to you if you walk with these men into the bush or into the forest, wherever these people are hiding, to go negotiate with them as those people were showing us on TV. So the major challenge is the fear of being harmed. And of course, we have a fear, not like a fear, though, but it's what the society imposes on us. We have the socio-cultural hindrance. There are certain places you don't want to go in, or you cannot go in as a woman because it is dominated by men who will not allow you join them. So that's one of the reasons why we are canvassing for gender inclusion. Because if you bring women to the table, they will bring a different dimension. Listen, we've had several years, centuries, decades of men running the show. And how has life been for us? We've had several conflicts, several wars. So why don't we think outside the box? I mean, it's been the same kind of people around the table. Why don't we change it a little bit? Why don't we allow women on the table? Because they could be actually the people who will bring the solution to this problem and end this continuous conflict that we all have that's driving all of us crazy in this country. So when you look at the society, where the society puts women, how the society sees women, you notice that we are hindered by that. So a behavioral change needs to happen across our community, across our society, so that women can be allowed to sit at the table, negotiate, bring peace, calm nerves down, bring reason, and bring another side to peace processes that we have not seen, because we've been seeing the side that the men have been put out there. So those are, for me, the key challenges. The fear of the harm, of course, what he puts on us, how the society sees us, our culture, and those hindrances that we have that do not allow women to sit at the table with the men. Thank you.
Awesome way to put it. In your opinion, Brenda, and let me ask this succinctly in a way that it emphasizes the contributions of women, because that's what this particular question is about. How will you assess the contributions of women to peace initiatives at the grassroots level in mitigating conflict and promoting societal cohesion in the country? I know the English is plenty. I'm aware of that. And it just goes to say that mitigating conflict, that's reducing conflict to the barest minimum, and promoting societal cohesion are two things that cannot be overemphasized when it comes to resolution of conflict. That's usually the end goal when it comes to peace initiatives generally. So my question is, how would you assess the contributions of women to these peace initiatives at the grassroots level? What would your assessment be?
Thank you so much. Personally, it is poor, and it's because of lack of inclusivity. Unfortunately, it is sad to say that women still constitute a small percentage of peace builders, not just in Nigeria, but also globally. If we look at statistics, globally, at least seven out of ten peace building processes have involved no women. This is globally. And then if we now bring it home, let's bring it home to the grassroots, back here in Nigeria, where we have formations of traditional rulers, religious rulers, religious leaders, and religious orders, and some social orders. You find the high chiefs and the kings and whatever they are called in different parts of this country having cabinets, and each cabinet consisting of, a set of older men. You hardly find cabinets that have women in them. Rather, these days we have, a circle of women who call themselves, women leaders, and they lead only women in a small group. Maybe in a church you have Christian mothers, in a community you have a woman leader of the community, and what her job is to take the message that is given to her, hand it over to her by the cabinet, the king's cabinet, to the women. Not that she goes in to contribute her say. No, she doesn't. She just sits and she takes orders, and she goes to her fellow women and gives them the orders. So if you look at the formation, the traditional leaders that we have in this country are mostly men, the religious leaders are mostly men. You know, you have priests, you have pastors. It's only recently we started having pastors that are women. Most of the cases, their husband dies and they take over the church. But there are still few. And in the traditional setting, when there is a conflict or disagreement, or maybe people are fighting over land or whatever, they take it to the king's cabinet, made up of men. They're the ones who make the decision. And the kings and the chiefs, or whatever they're called, they are the guardians of the truth. In very few cases do you find a woman. And if you find her, her role there is not to give her view. Her role may be to take whatever message that has been handed down by the men to give the women. The late Kofi Annan, the former UN Secretary General, once urged international community to move from a culture of reaction to a culture of prevention. Because the culture of reaction is usually what we have because the political, international political space is dominated by men. And he said, let's move more to a culture of prevention. And he further emphasized the importance of early warning and gender equality in conflict prevention. When I say early warning, I mean, you know, any source about any escalatory development. You know, you could have small pockets of tensions around, and you notice it and are able to nip it in the bud so that it doesn't escalate and become, you know, a bigger conflict. In most cases, women get information, but are unable to share the information because of where the society keeps them. Listening to women and learning from their experiences can correct gender blind spots in early warning information collection and analysis, and it can contribute towards conflict prevention. So these are some of the things that we need to put out there for our leaders, who are mostly men, to understand that the role of women is crucial to ending conflict, to peace building, and eventually to disarmament. Thank you.
You're very welcome. You're very welcome. Now, bringing it again back to Nigeria, we cannot talk about Nigeria without talking about insecurity and women doing something, whatever role that is, within their communities to promote peace. Now, I asked you earlier about the assessment of women, your opinion, when it comes to peace initiatives, and you said they've done poorly. So in your words, or to summarize what you said, they've done poorly, but there's still a lot of work that can be done to improve the current assessment. Am I right?
Absolutely.
Okay. Now, based off on that opinion, what obstacles are some of these women facing that contribute to this poor assessment? What obstacles are they facing, particularly when you look at it from the aspect of insecurity and the just the rising level of insecurity? If you look at it from that context, what obstacles are they facing? And by they, I mean women who play parts in promoting peace and conflict resolution.
Thank you so much. Absolutely. That we have obstacles that women are facing and they continue to face. Some of them I've discussed earlier. Of course, the sociocultural obstacles, religious obstacles, and fear of physical harm. Armed conflicts hamper the advancement of women, because armed conflicts divert resources, they disrupt families, and they leave social and economic burdens to children and, in fact, to future generations. In fact, recently, when Nigeria's poverty situation was being discussed, it was reclassified as multidimensional poverty, which means it consists of economic poverty, intellectual poverty. The one that is so striking to me is intergenerational poverty. That means if you live in this country and you fall under the poverty line, you are more likely to pass on that poverty to your children, and they are likely to pass the same poverty to their own children and generations, and it keeps going like that. It's only, you know, in very few situations where people break out of the poverty, you know, cycle and the circle, and then, you know, perhaps move above the poverty line. So these obstacles are sociocultural, they are religious, and of course the physical harm. These are, you know, the things that, the structures that are holding women back, that women fear. If we're able to have a society that is open, then more women join in decision making, more women in fact-finding mission, more women in interrogate, and also ensure their protection in all these steps, you will definitely have more women joining to contribute their quota to peace initiatives from the grassroots level. But with all these things that women are facing and they are not sure of protection, no woman would want to come up. And the ones that have tried to come up are usually suppressed because they are usually few. The UN actually is making making several steps. They are moving forward with their internal reforms, such as the Gender Action Plan by the Department of Disarmament Affairs, the DDA, which is meant to ensure women's active gender inclusion in substance and in participation in anything disarmament. So this type of strategy is something that our governments need to adopt in order to have, you know, to deliberately include women on the table. Because if we are not on the table, we are probably on the menu. And you know how it's going to be when people decide your fate. They don't know your situation. They don't walk in your shoes. Mm. So they have no idea what you are experiencing. So this is how I see. These are the obstacles that are facing women. And if we're able to overcome these obstacles, we'll definitely have more women on the table discussing a peace and peaceful resolution. Thank you.
Mm. Thank you. Thank you so much, Brenda. All right. This is 26 minutes to 4 on Your Women Radio WFM 91.7. And today we're discussing, the matter of women, disarmament and security in Nigeria. Again, women, disarmament and security in Nigeria. Now, I'm still speaking with Brenda Anugwam, and she is giving us some insight into the current situation of things and how best to improve them. Brenda is a lawyer and expert in gender matters. All right, so you can call into the phone lines 07000-917-917 or 902-562-5455. Again, 07000-917-917 or 902-562-5455. The text line is also available. You can send a text message or a WhatsApp message to 0703-175-6537. All right. You can always call in to contribute and send your messages as the conversation goes on. So back to you, Brenda. Thank you very much again for joining us, and I'm glad I still have you with me. You mentioned some of these obstacles earlier, and every time I complain about something or every time a concern has been put out there, I always like to counter it with a solution, so that when we say, oh, A, B, C are the challenges we're facing, I'm sure people want to hear A, B, C are the possible solutions that we can render to create a different narrative concerning A, B, and C. Now, in regards to this now, in regards to all these obstacles that women face when performing their roles as peace promoters, as resolution providers for conflict, what can women groups do to address this problem? What can women groups do to address some or all of these obstacles that you earlier mentioned?
Thank you so much. Women groups can do a lot, whether they yield good results or not. It still should not deter anybody. Women groups can start with advocacy to critical stakeholders, the governmental and non-governmental agencies can be the first point of call. Governmental agencies, here at the FCT, you have the National Assembly, the lawmakers, and they are the arm of government that are closer to the people. So advocacy to the National Assembly to be included in decision-making. Advocacy to non-governmental actors, help for support to put the message out there. This can help. Just like I mentioned, if we're not at the table, we're probably on the menu.
Mm-hmm.
So we can also go ahead with awareness creation, hold discussions, public discussions, use the media like we are doing right now to discuss and highlight women issues and challenges and call for peace and educate the society on the need to dialogue more rather than, carrying arms. But of course, this would definitely need support. So women groups can also go further to canvass for support from crucial stakeholders. They are political giants who could lend their weight to the messages. They are economic giants, most of them in the private sector, who could support through their corporate social responsibility mm-hmm. projects or programs to support these women, the women groups. And also to fund and sponsor training programs for women interested in peacekeeping, holding peace dialogue, and also peace activists to engage in peace talks with advocacy groups, to reach politicians, to reach community influencers, and to be able to reach those relevant groups that can end conflict. These groups that are, wherever they are situated, that have people who are able to reach them, women can use these influencers to reach them, to pass on that message. But, like I said, definitely they will require support. So,
of course,
conversing for support from critical stakeholders, from international partners, for instance, the Norwegian government through the NORAD, the Norwegian Agency for Development Cooperation, supports efforts towards women, peace and security. Such a stakeholder can be approached. There are several other international partners that can be approached for support to build a capacity of women who engage in peace processes and negotiation. Mm-hmm. And by doing this, we have more women whose capacities are built. We have more women groups reaching out to policymakers, lawmakers. We have more women groups talking on the radio, using the media as we are doing now, talking about it, raising awareness. These make a change. It may not be immediate, but in the long run, we'll be able to send our message through. Thank you.
Thank you so much. 20 minutes to 4 on your Women Radio WFM 91.7. This is still Women Voices for Peace. And we're discussing today women, disarmament and security in Nigeria. I have with me my guest, Brenda Anugwam, gender lawyer and expert in gender matters. The phone lines again are open 07000-917-917-1902-562-5455. The text line you can reach or via text messaging 0703-175-6537. Okay, so Brenda, we've talked about women groups. We've talked about your assessment of where women are right now when it comes to promoting peace and peace processes. So isn't it a topic to discuss as regards the rights of people or the rule of people or the approach of people to certain scenarios? Now, this is my follow-up question to that, that was just the background. This is the context. Do we still have the government's protective mandate as the jungle rule of might is right continues to hold sway in a democratic setting? Because we are in a democracy in Nigeria. Our system of government right now is a democracy, even though some schools of thought intend to argue that with you, and they have their reasons, obviously, but we still operate in a democracy. Do we have the government's protective mandate as the jungle rule of might is right continues to hold sway in this particular democratic society, do we have the protective mandate? Can we trust this mandate?
Government's protective mandate? I should think so. In fact, I hope so. And I'm saying this because I feel that the government needs to do more in order to win the complete trust of the citizens.
Would you say they're making any effort so far?
Pardon?
Before you go on, would you say the government is making any effort so far?
I think the government is making an effort. But is the effort enough? I don't think so, because of the result. Now, you can make all the efforts you want in this world, and if it doesn't yield the much-needed result, the people may not feel that you are doing enough. So that's why I'm saying the government needs to do more in order to win the complete trust of citizens. Let us even dissect might is right. Might is right is like an idea that people who have power can do whatever they want and get away with it.
True.
Literally speaking, is about the survival of the fittest. You know, I hold the gun, I hold the power, I control whatever is done. And such doesn't go well with the civilians, the ordinary man on the street. So let me give you an example. We just marked 1 year anniversary of the NSAS protest. And even after 1 year, we've had people talk about what was done to them. There were judicial panels set up. Still, we saw on TV what was done to journalists, how they were harassed, how innocent civilians were maltreated. We even saw someone spray paint or run a spray pepper into somebody's eye, you know. And there was an apology given later, and I think the apology was given because the whole world has seen what had happened. So when you have such a situation where people in uniform who carry guns can treat civilians that way, there is less trust from the citizens. That is why I'm saying that the government needs to do more in order to win complete trust. For instance, what was going on at that target at that time could have been solved by mere discussion, by mere dialogue. They could have spoken to the person they suspected was a demonstrator, and maybe after interviewing him, could have realized that he was just an innocent person driving around or driving his passenger from one place to the other, and he didn't need to be beaten up, his car didn't need to be smashed, and he didn't deserve pepper being sprayed into his eyes.
Nobody
so what
does.
Am I saying? Yeah, absolutely. So what am I saying? It's still that survival of the fittest thing. It's still that I hold the gun, so I get to say what happened. And whatever I do, I can get away with it. How many of those officers have been punished? How many of them are going through disciplinary measures right now? How have we or how have they tried to compensate this person whose car was smashed, who had pepper smashed into his eyes? Did they pay his medical bills? You know, all those things, those are things that the government needs to do. It's not only about going to attack people wherever they are, the formations. We also need, there's also a responsibility to the citizens, to us, the people, the ordinary man on the street, in order for us to have that complete trust that, yes, the government protective mandate is for the people. When you get dragged like that, when journalists, are, you know, their cameras are snatched and all that, it's as if there is no freedom of the press. But our Constitution guarantees freedom of the press. So when you see all these incidents, these are pockets of incidents, these are the ones that we captured on camera. What about the ones we didn't capture? So you get to doubt whether the government protective mandate is for the people. But personally, I think we still do. We still have a protective mandate from the government, but they still need to do more in order to win complete trust from the people. Thank you.
That is very true. And that was a very detailed answer. That was a very true and very detailed answer. My final question to you, Brenda, would be along the lines of reducing the cost, the human cost of unregulated arms availability, which is death, of course, and severe injury. What can be done to reduce this? Do we put in measures to make sure that only people qualified to hold these weapons can have access to them? Do we put extra measures in place at the border or at the maybe offices where importation and exportation go, imports and exports happen? Do we put in more measures along the step to tighten the exit and entry of these firearms? What can we do to reduce the human cost of unregulated arms availability?
Thank you so much. The simple answer is involve more women in peace processes and negotiations. We can build a wall around the country if that's what we want. These people will always find ways of sneaking arms in. But when you involve women, women who are natural peacemakers, if we're able to come to the table and negotiate with warring factions, with aggrieved people, with conflicting communities, you will find out that people will start adopting dialogue more than taking up arms to fight. Because if you check whatever it is that is pushing all these people who are carrying arms, some of them say they are fighting for their rights. Some say they are fighting for survival. You know, some say they are fighting for... They all have different things that they are fighting for. That's why they carry arms and do all the things they do. But if we are able to engage in more meaningful dialogue with women part of it, so inclusive dialogue, inclusive negotiation, women's equal and meaningful participation in peace process and negotiation is actually an end. It's both an end in itself as well as a means to secure inclusive and sustainable peace. Because at the end of the day, what we are looking for is peace. We want an end to all the conflict. We want an end to having people run from their communities and become IDPs. Just on the news this morning, it was said that the government is planning to close IDPs. If you're planning to close down IDP camps,
where do these people go?
Absolutely. Where are they going? If they're going back home, have you been able to disarm the people, the bandits, the terrorists who are making their lives difficult? Have you been able to ensure that they will have peace? And most of them are farmers. Can they go back to their farmlands without having their heads being chopped off? So those are the things we need to look at. When you involve women in peace processes, the results are usually positive. Because women are builders. Women build economies. Women build society. Women build homes. Women can keep peace. Women can sustain peace. And if I may end, I will end by saying any peace agreement that reflects the needs and priorities of both men and women is an agreement that can ensure sustainable peace. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Brenda. Finally,
I
let you go, I want your final words concerning disarmament, women in particular, when it comes to security in Nigeria. What are your final words?
Pardon?
Your final words before I let you go.
Yes. Education is a fundamental right, and it is essential for the exercise of all other rights. The right to life, the right to freedom of speech, right to press, right to everything. So we need to educate the society. We need to have more women around the table in order for there to be peaceful resolution and mechanism. Disarmament can only be effective if everybody is represented at the table. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Brenda. Thank you for joining us on Women Voices for Peace today. Thank you so much.
You're so welcome.
Although women are severely affected by war, vulnerable to sexual and gender-based violence, including rape, forced conscription, sexual slavery, abduction, and forced impregnation, among other atrocities, they are not simply victims but can play more proactive roles as well. Peace and security are areas in which women have been particularly marginalized, especially where key policy decisions have been made and resource allocations have been decided in time past. And this is why the need for this conversation is imperative for further times going forward. This is a conversation that still needs to be had so that women can understand the impact of disarmament and how much it impacts security in Nigeria on a general note. Thank you very much to my guest, Brenda Anugwam, lawyer and expert in gender matters. Women Voices for Peace is sponsored by WANEP, West Africa Network for Peace Building, with support from the Norwegian Agency for Development Cooperation, NORAD, and also Women in Peace Building Network, WIPNET. Women Voices for Peace holds every Tuesday on Women Radio WFM 91.7 by 3 p.m. And in this respect, I want to say again a big thank you to the engineer on duty and production crew of Taiwo Adelaye, Dabira Oluwagbile, and Victoria Owaifo. Make it a date, same time, same station next week. My name is Sumto Titilayo Ajama. Good afternoon.
Threatened by terrorism, wars, killings, and various vices.
Its effects are mostly felt by women and girls.
Peace and security is a collective responsibility as it concerns women, girls, men, and boys. Join WANEP
on Women's Voices for Peace every Tuesday at 3 p.m.
on Women Radio WFM 91.7 as we engage on issues of women, peace, and security.
On Women's Voices for Peace
on Women Radio WFM.
Like the moon and the sun, she is worth more than gold. Like the stars in the sky, she is worth more than diamond. She is worth more than silver. Strong, a woman of dignity. She is prayerful, a woman of substance. She is so blessed, her beauty na evidence. Thank you.
Mistakes. I am whole. I am human. I deserve love and will allow myself to be loved. I release all fear, negativity, and pain. I open my heart to positivity, joy, and peace. I am strong. I have survived many things to get to where I am. I forgive all those I've hurt and those that have hurt me. And most importantly, I forgive myself. My voice matters. My opinion counts. I am worthy. I am enough. I am free. I am loved.
I swear to God.